It is such a pleasure to be here. We have been blessed with a beautiful day. I firmly believe that every Lord's Day is a beautiful day, but sometimes weather-wise, they are extra special, and this is a beautiful time of the year. I don't know about others. I find it's hard on my throat when the air gets this dry, but I'll take it otherwise. I can, you know, if I have to whisper, that'll be okay. I just love this time of year. The fall is so beautiful. And I appreciate your presence. It's been mentioned, we've got a good number here. So many, it looks like, have come back from this morning. We've got some visitors with us. Glad to have some friends here with us. And just glad to have all of you here. And before I get into tonight's lesson, I want to make mention of what's upcoming. Anyway, this morning we talked about marriage. And then we've talked about that motivation of the cross. Tomorrow night, we're going to look at a lesson I entitled, Are We Too Narrow-Minded? The idea of a lot of people is that we just, you know, they would say churches of Christ are just too narrow-minded in their focus. And we're going to be examining that and looking, Lord willing, Tuesday night at a question about instrumental music. Look at how one church of Christ a few years ago decided to add instrumental music in their worship. Why did they do that? Is that something we should do? Are there good reasons to not do that? And Wednesday night we will close out with living as strangers and sojourners on this earth. Sometimes people will ask me a question about, you know, oh, how do you decide what you're going to preach in a meeting? And I hate to tell them about flipping coins, you know, that just doesn't sound right for a preacher, but no, there's no exact science to it. It's a tough call sometimes. I try to keep in mind, especially when it's a group I don't really know. I know some of you, but I don't know this group. Acts 20, 26 and 27, Paul spoke of how that he was innocent of the blood of all men because he had not shunned to declare to them the whole counsel of God. You know, that's my guiding principle. I hope it is. It should be in all my preaching. That whatever is in the book, whether it's popular or unpopular, that's what needs to be preached. When you go in a meeting, obviously in 4 days, I can't preach the whole counsel of God. You know, there's a reasonable time limit each night, and we're going to try to abide by that. But I just try to preach things that I believe are generally needed. You know, they may not be the things that people want to hear necessarily, or things that people don't want to hear. It's just things I believe are needed in every place. And I hope that my choices will be helpful to you this week. And I want to begin tonight by asking you a question. What does this list of names have in common, besides being people? Adam and Eve, there's Joseph, there's Tamar, there's Aaron, there is Elijah, the immoral woman of Proverbs 7. There's John the Baptist. Well, you know, you could probably come up with some other things. But the thing I'm aiming for is that at some point in their life, at least, every one of them, and I meant to mark Elijah off that list, but they all had something in their dress, their clothing, that said something about them. When Adam and Eve were wearing the fig leaves, that was really a proclamation, we failed. We have sinned against God. When Joseph was wearing his coat or tunic of many colors, it sent a very loud message to his brothers, this is Daddy's favorite. You know, when Tamar covered herself in that special way in Genesis 38, she made Judah think she was a harlot. When Aaron would put on the special garments, there was nobody that didn't realize this is God's high priest. When you think of the woman of Proverbs 7, it says she had the attire of a harlot. I don't know exactly what that attire was, but it marked her out as an immoral woman. When John the Baptist came with his camel hair and his leather belt, I think there was an intentional identification with Elijah to look like him, to be more like him. Dress sends a message. Dress has the power to convey something about us. In 1 Timothy 2, 9 and 10, Paul, after saying that the men ought to pray everywhere with holy hands, he said, in like manner also that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. 1 Timothy 2, 9 and 10 deserves careful and serious study. But tonight, my study is really not going to be about the particular things said in those two verses. But I do want you to notice the idea that there is that which is proper for those professing godliness. And that just automatically implies there's that which is improper. If there is that which is proper for godliness, obviously there's that which is not proper for godliness. The lesson is, what does our dress say about us? Dress has always had the power to send a message. And we need to stop sometimes and ask ourselves, what message is it sending about us? Let's not ever pretend that dress doesn't send a message. The world understands full well that dress can often send a signal, a message. Many businesses expect their employees to dress businesslike, professional. Now, that's going to vary from business to business. It's going to vary in parts of the country. But, you know, in certain, you know, and this is not every job, but so many of them, they want, when people walk in the door, they want what their employees are wearing to send the right message. I mean, you walk around Alabama on a Saturday, any time of the year, but especially in the fall, you know there's an Alabama fan. There's an Auburn fan. Up where we are, occasionally you go, bless his heart, there's a Tennessee fan. You know, I mean, it happens, you know. No, we, in all seriousness, you know the clothes send a message. They say, you know, this is one. You know, with me, this time of year, it's gone, he's quit wearing his colors, you know, he's embarrassed. You know, we all know that. We also know this. The world says that some clothing is sexy, it's seductive, it's sensual. You just read the advertisements. As you know, you get the catalog or you go in the store and see what it says about it. It says this is designed to make people look, to make people understand one's attractiveness. And I want you to make sure you understand something. The idea that somebody is trying to say, I am attractive, I am physically attractive, everybody look at me, they don't necessarily equate that with I'm available. But we ought to understand, it is a message of attractiveness. You know, the miniskirt was not designed by somebody that says, I want everybody to notice this woman's godliness when she wears it. You know, the first thing people will see when they, you know, say when they see that is, now that must be a Christian woman. That's not what it says. Dress sends a message. And that brings some concerns for me. In Romans, the 12th chapter, I call this part of the lesson Concerns for God's Holy People. And I want to start by saying we are to be a holy people. Romans, the 12th chapter, verse 1, where Paul has set forth the greatness of God's plan, the justification that's in Christ, this great propitiation that's in Him. In verse 1 of the 12th chapter, he said, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God. And I understand that to take us back to everything that's been said up to this point about the goodness of God. This morning I talk about being moved by the cross. A people who understand God's grace, that understand how God in loving favor has given His Son to die for us, that has given Him to transform us, want to become what? Present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We're called upon to be a holy people, a people set apart to God's service. We are set apart from this world, not conformed to this world, not the kind of people who are just pressed into the mold, but we are being actively transformed, changed to be what God wants us to be living sacrifices. In the book of 1 Peter, in the first chapter, one thing you have to get used to with me is I get behind on my clicking sometimes. So if you're a note taker, you're often writing notes on what I just said, not what I am saying. But, you know, 1 Peter 1 and verse 13. Therefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ as obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lust as in your ignorance, but as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. Where is that quotation taken? Verse 16. Be holy, for I am holy. That's a statement found in the book of Leviticus, found more than once in Leviticus. Leviticus was a book that taught God's people holiness. It taught them separation. And it enforced this separation through. They ate differently than the nations around them. Their worship was different than those nations around them. There were aspects of their dress that were different. They were to be a different people because they were consecrated to God, separated unto Him. And I believe today, if we are separated from this world, if we are not conforming but being transformed, it's going to impact our dress. I want to begin by mentioning an area that I would like to offer to you some things to think about. In Hebrews, the 12th chapter, in verse 28, it says of our service to God, therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For our God is a consuming fire. I believe these are verses that are almost completely forgotten or ignored in our culture today. The idea of approaching God with reverence. Worship, in, you know, so-called, in so many places, has really become all about us. It's all about what man wants and how man needs to feel. And you know, we all want a good, positive, warm feeling when we leave. And it's about us feeling good. And there's that loss of the idea of reverence, that deep respect and awe for God. That realization that, yes, 1 John 4:8, God is love, but God is also a consuming fire. To be approached with care. In the 10th chapter, now, I find this so striking. In my Bible, I flip back one page. Yours might be the same opening. Large print Bible, you might go a couple of pages. But having said chapter 12, it's God is a consuming fire. Served with reverence, godly fear. Verse 19 of the 10th chapter says, therefore, brethren, having boldness, some would say confidence, having boldness to enter the holiest by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way which He consecrated for us through the veil that is His flesh. And having a high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for He who promised is faithful. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, And so much the more as you see the day approaching, this series of exhortations, let us do this, let us. Our coming together in worship is not disconnected to this entering the holiest by the blood of Jesus, having confidence to come before God. And yet, as we come with confidence, knowing that God will accept us, we also come with reverence, and we come with a spirit of awe into His presence. The worship of God is a special thing. I remember when Exodus 19, when God was going to appear on Mount Sinai and they were to get ready, they had to make themselves holy. He said, wash your clothes, sanctify yourselves, do these things. When we start talking about this and dress, I'm not about to enter into the practice of making laws and telling you what is proper worship attire tonight. What I want to do is just ask you to think. The way we dress so often reflects our view of the occasion. Whether it be a lighthearted occasion, a serious moment. And I think that sometimes our dress can reflect on whether or not we are conscious of the worshiping the Almighty, or whether we're here to be entertained, to feel good. Don't let your worship, your dress, reflect a diminished view of the importance of this. That's what I want you to think about that. And then there are what I call messages. I'm talking about clothing that has words, pictures, graphics, something that clearly is intended to send some kind of message. Now, my concerns are related to, among other things, these passages. Ephesians 5. The writer here, the Apostle Paul, is spoken in the first part of this chapter about avoiding filthiness, uncleanness, fornication. He begins to speak in verse 8 about light. Light versus darkness. In verse 11, he says, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. There are some things, he said, that we just have no part in. To have fellowship is to share in. There are things we ought not be a part of. In Matthew, the 5th chapter, verse 14, I think you know what this says. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. This is a passage. No, this is not a dress passage, put that in quotes. It's a passage about living. The Christian is to live in a way that brings light, that shows the light of God in his life. In 2 Corinthians, the 8th chapter, verse 20, this is one of the three places where you can read about that collection being taken for the saints at Jerusalem. First given in 1 Corinthians 16, and then it's mentioned here in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, and then it'll be referenced in Romans 15. But one of the things Paul had done when he wrote to the Corinthians, you remember, he said, whomever you approve, then they'll take it to Jerusalem. And here in the 8th chapter, he's talking about messengers, verse 19, that were chosen by the churches to travel with us, who administer this gift. And he explains why these men are with him. Avoiding this, that anyone should blame us in this lavish gift which is administered by us, providing honorable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. I would offer to you that what he states here in these two verses is a principle that a lot of us as Christians sometimes struggle with. That we kind of have the idea sometimes, well, it doesn't really matter what other people think as long as I know I'm doing right. That wasn't the attitude of Paul. I'm confident the man was honest enough that if he had stuck every penny in his pocket, every penny would have been accounted for. But he said, this is too important. He said, I want these men chosen by these churches. I don't want to be the one responsible. Because I want it to be honorable, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. Clothing can send a message. And we need to think about it. Sometimes this is an area, there are gray areas. And your judgments and my judgment may not always be the same. But I want you to have an awareness. I want you to think about these things. Let me just throw out since it's football season. If I'm not a big NFL fan, but if I have a favorite team, oddly enough, it's the New England Patriots. You know, that's if I'm rooting for anybody, I'm rooting for them. I don't lose sleep over what happens with them, but who is their tight end? Rob Gronkowski. When healthy, he is the best tight end in the NFL. Okay, you Saints fans can argue, but you're wrong. You know, he's the best. He is also a man who has a terrible reputation for partying, for drinking, for immorality. Would I wear a Rob Gronkowski jersey? You know, to me, that's one of those I call the gray area, because he is, if you wear that, it may just simply say, I'm a Patriots fan. I like the best tight end. On the other hand, back during the summer, there was a brief period when what was the best-selling jersey at the NFL shop? It was the Michael Sam jersey, a man who's now on the practice squad. That was the best-selling jersey. People who put on a Michael Sam jersey were sending a message. That's clear. Sometimes it's not, I understand, it's not always clear cut. Sometimes it is. You know, endorsements of, I don't believe in endorsing false religion. I believe the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is a false religion. I do not believe the angel appeared to Joseph Smith. If the angel had appeared to him, Galatians 1, 8 and 9 says he was not to believe it. Would a BYU jersey, you see what I'm saying? There's a little gray. I'll give you another gray area, which was, and I'll tell you what decision I made. There are a lot of attire sold in, especially in this part of the country, that has Confederate battle flag on it. And I've seen the bumper sticker that says Heritage, Not Hate. I don't wear it. My children were forbidden to wear anything with that because of two things. One, I've seen how it's used. It is used as a symbol of hate by some people. And I would rather, there are too many other things they could wear rather than hurt other people. So we made a decision. Somebody may say, well, I just believe in the heritage. At least think about it. But then again, there are things that just clearly endorse sin. And I've seen Christians with them. You know, maybe if you want to stay in the sports realm, some of the NASCAR, I've got no objection to people watching guys drive around in a circle if they want to do that. You know, I actually kind of like it at times. I'm not wearing, you know, Dale Earnhardt or somebody else with, you know, the big liquor advertisements across it. That's a prominent feature in so much of their attire. Sometimes I've seen Christians wearing T-shirts for restaurants. You know, yeah, they sell some wings, but that's not what they're selling. Well, you know, there is no way anybody ought to be associated with that. You know, some entertainers are just clearly identified with immorality. They're not, I mean, they may sing, But they're known as their for their immorality, for their flagrant. Don't wear this kind of stuff. Don't endorse sin. Let your light shine. Again, there are just too many other things we can wear, that we can do, that don't reflect badly on Christ and His gospel. And then, probably the area you would have, your mind would have first gone to when we talk about dress, and that's sensuality. When we start thinking about clothing, I go back to something that happened in the 1960s. Now, I know some of you, that's way, way back. But there was a war fought in the 1960s. And I'm not talking about Vietnam. It was a war called the Sexual Revolution. You know who lost? Be better to say what lost. Morality and decency. They lost. It's just continued on. But what we're seeing now is the outcome of all of that. Attitude shifted. We have a country in which the fashion industry, I don't know if it ever did, but it certainly has nothing remotely resembling a biblical approach to morality. Marriage is honorable among all, in the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Hebrews 13:4. What do you think that means to most people who are clothes designers, who are in the fashion industry? It means nothing at all. You want to make a joke and get everybody to laugh, make a joke about lust. Matthew the 5th chapter, verse 27. Jesus said, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Jesus said, it matters the kind of things you're thinking, the kind of thoughts that are in your heart. And when you live in a world that doesn't think anything about sex before marriage and thinks very little about adultery, being unfaithful to one spouse, well, certainly thinking about it is not, that's no big deal. If that's not a big deal, then being the one who causes another to lust is certainly no big deal. But in Matthew the 18th chapter, Jesus said, "But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned into the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses, for offenses must come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes." Don't be the reason somebody else sins. God wants a chaste and quiet spirit. That's not what the fashion designers are going for. I often ask a few questions that I want people to think about. Take a look at your clothing, and I want to make clear, I'm talking to men and women here. Is it too low? Proverbs 5 talks about the husband-wife relationship, and he says, "Let her breast satisfy you at all times," talking to the young man about his wife. That which ought to be a part of the marriage relationship ought not to be on display for others. Is it too tight? Oh, you may be covered up. But sometimes the form fitting is designed to draw attention. Is it too short? Maybe is it too brief? I've wondered what, how much less could Adam have been wearing when he said to God, "I'm naked." And God didn't say, "Well, Adam, you silly thing, you're wearing as much as people several thousand years later will be wearing at the beach." He said, "Who told you you were naked?" God didn't argue with him when Adam said he was naked. Sometimes it's just too sheer. You can see through it. These are things, there may be other questions along the line of sensuality that ought to be asked. But these are things,
Somebody says, well, you know, I'm just not sure. I'll tell you, I have a rule. You know, occasionally, you know how leftovers are in the refrigerator? And every now and then, Janet pulls something out. And she can't remember. You know, we're at that age. Neither one of us can remember when we had that, you know. And she pulls the top up and she smells it. And she starts toward me and says, does this smell funny? And I don't, like, I don't even need to do that. If you smelled it and you weren't sure, don't bring it to me. You know, I mean, I think dress and leftovers ought to have go by the same rule. If you're in doubt, just throw it out. Go with something else. You know, look, it's not worth getting sick on bad leftovers. It's not worth it if you're not sure. Well, I say things like this and somebody says, yeah, but you know, God looks at the heart. God is not concerned about outward appearance. 1 Samuel, the 16th chapter, when David is anointed king, when the Lord has sent Samuel to Bethlehem, when Samuel was all excited, he looks at Eliab and says, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. Verse 7, but the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Well, I can't argue with what God said. God doesn't judge people by their height or their weight, the color of their hair or the absence of hair. He doesn't go by the color of one's skin, any of these kinds of things. But does that mean God's not concerned about outward actions, outward appearance at all? Well, you got to remember, this is being spoken in the time of the law of Moses, when God regulated a lot of things that might have had to do with, we might say, appearances that were more than the heart. You remember the story of Uzzah and the ark? There is no doubt that the hearts of the people involved in moving that ark on the cart, their hearts were devoted to God. It speaks of how David and the others, they played music before God with all their heart. But they died, or Uzzah died. You know, you couldn't touch a dead body, touch a dead animal. The priest, they were required to wear a specific attire. It didn't matter. Well, Aaron, my heart is right. No, you've got a special thing to wear. Every Israelite was required to have the tassel in the corner of the garment with the blue thread in it. What we must understand, the heart is to be involved, and the heart is vitally important, because the heart regulates action. Matthew 15, when the scribes and the Pharisees were concerned about this ritualistic washing that was not part of the law. There were washings, but they had gone far beyond the law. And Jesus has gone through various things with them. When he comes down to verse 18, he said, those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile a man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile a man. The one thing I have in common with the person that raises this objection is I am concerned about the heart. I'm concerned. I believe that sometimes in, you know, innocence, we can get into some habits. But as we learn, as we grow, and we understand what God expects of us in reverence and chastity, in our influence and letting our light shine, that's going to reflect itself in our dress. Again, some of us, we may make some different judgments along this line. I'm not overly concerned that somebody's judgment comes out a little different than mine. I'm concerned about, do we have hearts that are concerned about the things we're talking about tonight? The heart's going to regulate what we wear. Make sure yours is committed to these kinds of things. Somebody else raises the question, well, who gave you the right to make the rules? Well, that one's easy to answer now. That's a real easy question. Nobody. No one's given me that right. James 4:12 says there's one lawgiver. And I know that's not me. Revelation 22:18 warns about adding to God's word. I don't want to do that. God didn't lay down a specific dress code. But let me tell you, God did make rules about reverence and holiness and purity and letting one's light shine. And the fact that I may not know the place to draw the line always doesn't mean the line doesn't exist. You know, I've illustrated this way sometime, maybe it'll help you, that imagine we're up in a mountainous area and there's a cliff here. And there's a sign that says, the edge of the cliff may give way. In other words, there is a point at which you get too close to the edge, it will give way and you'll go tumbling down the cliff. What's the smart thing to do there? To say, well, it doesn't say how close you could get, and so you just go over and, you know, and your wife gets to collect your insurance, you know? I mean, you respect that. If you knew that, okay, I'm on solid ground right here, but somewhere between here and the edge, it gives way. You don't just keep going. You show respect for it. There is a line. Use a pure heart to set the rules. Make sure you have that good heart. Lastly, some people will say, well, I just can't help it that some people have dirty minds. You know, we talk about sensual dress. Dress that may cause those to lust. And they say, I can't help it. Well, again, that's true. There are people who are so given to lust and ungodliness. 2 Peter 2 says, eyes full of adultery. There are people whose minds are so perverted by their commitment to vile things that they would look at the most modestly dressed person and they could be guilty of lust in that. Yet, let me remind you, Paul didn't take the approach of the collection. Well, I'm not responsible for those kind of people that have suspicious minds that are going to make accusations against people. You know, they're probably thieves themselves if they would think that about me. No, Paul said, I'm going to do things honorable. I'm going to do that which looks right in the sight of others. There may be people who look in lust anyway. But do you remember what Matthew 18 said? If you're the cause for someone sinning, then it would be better if the millstone were tied around your neck and you were cast into the depths of the sea. Make sure you're innocent. Make sure you're not the one who contributed to it. If they sin, let it be on them and not on you. Clothes do say something about us. You know, sometimes they may say nothing more than he has poor taste. He's colorblind. That's okay. Those kind of things have been said about me a few times, though I'm not colorblind, you know. If that's the worst that's ever said, that's okay. But what we want is when it comes to our relationship to God, we want our clothing, our dress, to be that that reflects the right things. I understand. In a world that has no regard for the principles we've looked at tonight, it's not always easy. It's not always easy to be a holy person in an unholy world. The old proverb, not biblical proverb, but nevertheless says, the nail that sticks up gets hammered down. It's not easy to be that which stands out. But I go back to 1 Peter as we bring this to a close, where Peter has called upon them in the words of Leviticus, "Be holy, for I am holy." And notice as he goes on, "And if you call on the Father who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. He indeed was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you who through him believe in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God." Why did I start this morning with the cross? Because it is the cross that helps us in difficult times. It's not easy to be holy in this unholy world, but he shed his precious blood for me. He did that. I can do this. That's not too much. It's not too much to make sure my dress sends the right message about my relationship to God, my concern for my neighbor, my commitment to purity because of what he did for me. Let's live for the one who gave himself for us in every aspect of our lives, not just our dress, but in every way. And if you've not yet begun that, if you've not yet begun to live for Jesus, we ask you to do that this evening. We're going to sing the song for your encouragement. If you need this evening to have that blood of Christ wash you as you're baptized into his death, as Romans 6:3 says, we'd love to have that done this evening. Maybe you're a child of God and you've turned away from his path. We'd love to have you come back this evening. We would help any way we could if you just come to the front as we stand and sing together.